Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David Mitchell, the 12th hour Post College South Carolina Congregation on time, 12th hour Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is July 23, 2017, or it is April 1, 2021. Let's start our first service on this new moon Sabbath with a song entitled, I Love to Tell the Story. Part 8, we're on Shepherd Rod, Volume 2, page 133. We're on the last paragraph. As the truth of the two inseparable doctrines were thrown down in 508 AD, preliminary to the sitting up of the papacy, just so the imprisonment of the Pope in 1798 was preparatory for the restoration of the jointly taught Bible truths of the Sabbath and the sanctuary and the daily. For the accountability that rests on the papacy is not for the observance of the day, but rather for the desire for the changing of the law of the Yahweh, as shown in the Daniel 7:25, and to change the times and laws. For the papacy thought to erase the seventh day Sabbath and from the eternal law, and inscribe the first day of the week in its place. How was the congregation paganized? It was the Roman emperors who paganized the congregation, and as the pagans always observed Sunday, the Sabbath was set aside as far as the church's authorities. For the priests and the emperors were concerned that for the pagans cared not for the Sabbath. They were not taught its sacredness, and the few Christians who tried to keep the holy day were lost in the multitude. Who are the few Christians today? It would be the Davidians. It would be the Davidians, as opposed to the millions of Seventh-day Adventists. The Davidians only had a few thousand at the most. They never had a million. They never had a million Adventist converts. So the few Christians would be the daughters of Israel, the daughters of the Adventist Church, which would be the Davidians and the Shepherd Rod, 1930-1970, with two leaders, V.G. Holliff and Ben Roden. And then you have the Branch Davidians, Seventh-day Adventists, with the one leader, Brother Stephen Johnson. All right, they were not taught its sacredness. And the few Christians who tried to keep the holy day were lost in the multitude. Now keep in mind that the martyrs that hid out in the rocks and the mountains for their faith, they were the apostolic Nazarene followers that didn't vary from the truth of the blood of the covenant of the Yeshua, of the new covenant. They kept all the holy days. That's when they were hunted down by the Catholic Church and martyred for 1260 years. So it wasn't those, it was a few Christians who tried to keep the holy day. And it should say who tried to keep the holy days, because they knew they were binding during the Dark Ages, but they were taken captive by the Catholic Church because they had apostatized to begin with to save their life, and so therefore they were lost in the multitude. So the Sabbath services were a thing of the past. Notice it said the Sabbath services. And all of the holy days, there's 70 in a year for the house of Israel. All of those holy days were a thing of the past during the Dark Ages. It wasn't, though, for those who hid out for their faith. Now, there was a lot of them that hid out for their faith and that lived freely and happily, but they had to go into the high rocks in the mountains, and way up in the northern Alps and so forth, there in Switzerland. They had to hide out, and so it says, this was accomplished by 508 A.D. For this satanic act paved the way, and the papacy was set up in 538 A.D., for the Pope was made the absolute ruler, King of the kings, and a corrector of the heretics by the so-called divine authority. For the scheme was for the perpetuity of the false doctrines and for the keeping of the truth underfoot forever. For it is a most mysterious thing that the way the old enemy of the mankind has succeeded in deceiving the strongest intellects, he enthralls them unto their own destruction. Thus it has been in every age, as previously explained. Rome at the first persecuted the apostolic believers of the Nazarene creed. But when the old dragon saw that the persecution could not overthrow their faith in the blood of the Yeshua, of the everlasting covenant, he reversed his plan and devised a more subtle satanic scheme for the destroying of the apostolic congregation of the Nazarenes. For he worked as always through the natural heart, using the human tool for the turning out of a deception unseen by the mortal eye. Gibbon's Rome, Volume 2, page 273-274. Says, by the edicts of the toleration, he, Constantine, removed the temporal disadvantage which had hitherto retarded the progress of Christianity, meaning retarded the progress of those apostatized Nazarene people that had joined the pagan Roman power, church. They were called Christians, but they'd been retarded, and its active and numerous ministers received a free permission, a liberal encouragement for the recommending of the salutary truths of the revelation by the every argument that could affect the reason or piety of the mankind. For the exact balance of the two religions, Christian and pagan, continued but a moment. For the cities which signalized a forward zeal by the voluntary destruction of their temples, the pagans were distinguished by the municipal privileges and regarded with the popular donatives. The salvation of the common people was purchased at an easy rate. If it be true that in 1 year 12,000 men were baptized at the Rome, besides a proportionable number of the women and children, and that a white garment with 20 pieces of the gold had been promised by the emperor unto every convert, this was the law of the Constantine, which gave freedom unto all the slaves who should embrace Christianity. In this manner, Rome paganized the apostolic congregation, and what the persecution failed to do, donatives and privileges accomplished. As the victorious Christians were pressing forward against the impregnable persecuting wall, which was supported by the devil, he suddenly drew back, allowing it to collapse. Thus, as the persecution ceased, it caused them to fall, as it were, by their own force, so that the satanic power failed to do by the persecution he accomplished by a sudden retreat, when the old dragon saw that he could not overthrow that spiritual house by the persecution. He reversed the scheme and employed his power for the undermining of the apostolic foundation by the donatives and various inducements for the pagans in the favor of the Christians. And when I say the Christians, we're talking about the apostatized Nazarene that had joined the pagans. As the pagans rushed to join the congregation, the current of apostasy turned against the Christians. Instead of the church Christianizing the world, paganized with the church. In this way, the Christians fell under the power of the dragon and thereby were swallowed by his heads, paganized. It is Satan's design to fully ensure his plan. He turned the persecution toward the pagans, fearing that the true Christian spirit would revive if the two sects, Christian and pagan, were in existence. Gibbon says, under the Anastasia reign, Christianity obtained an easy and lasting victory. In a sin, as the smile of the royal patronage was withdrawn, the genius of the paganism, which had been fondly raised and cherished by the arts of Julian, sunk irrevocably in the dust. Gibbon's Rome, Volume 2, page 521. For a special commission was granted unto the Sigenius, the Praetorian, prefect of the East, and afterwards to the courts of Jovius and Gaudentius, two officers of a distinguished rank in the West, by which they were directed to shut the temple, to seize or destroy the instruments of the idolatry, to abolish the privileges of the priest, and for the confiscating of the consecrated property for the benefit of the emperor of the church or the army. Many of those temples were the most splendid and beautiful monuments of the Grecian architecture, and the emperor himself was interested in, or not to deface the splendor of his own cities, or to diminish the value of his own possession. And the Syria, the divine and excellent Marcellus, as he is styled by the Theodoret, a bishop animated with the apostolic fervor, resolved to level with the ground the stately temple. Early when a sentence of the destruction against the idols of the Alexander was pronounced, the Christians set up a shout of joy and exultation, while the unfortunate pagan, whose fury had given way to the consternation, retired with hasty, silent steps. The officers proceeded to demolish the temple of Serapis and to content himself with reducing the edifice itself into a heap of rubbish, a part of which was soon afterwards cleared away to make room for a church created in the honor of the Christian martyrs. Gibbon's Rome, Volume 3, page 140 to 146. You might say, in honor of the apostolic martyrs, not Christian martyrs. All right, that's end of page 135. Let's go right on in to 136. It says, thus the pagans joined the apostolic or the Christian church through the force and bribery instead of conviction of the sin, and thereby Christianity gave way unto idolatry, says Gibbon. Both religions had been alternately disgraced by the seeming acquisition of the worthless proselytes of those Voltaires of the reigning purple, who could pass without a reason, without a blush, from the church to the temple and from the altars of Jupiter to the sacred table of the Christians, Volume 2, page 522. For the church, in her purity, filled with the spirit of the meek and lowly Yahshua, battled against the oppression and torture, for they prayed for those who would take their lives, saying, Yahshua, or Yahweh, forgive them, for they know not what they do. They, like the Stephen, kneel down under a rain of stones, pleading, Yahweh, lay not this sin unto their charge. Really, the Christians, who were once zealous for the pure standard of the church, took the crown of the civil authorities and compelled the pagans to join their ranks. As the pagans and the Christians became one, when I say Christians, we're talking about the apostatized apostolic Nazarene people that gave up their faith, and they recanted, and they joined the Roman atheist infidels that had no religion of their own, that it was totally Satan oriented, and this is what those that apostatize, that's what they end up going into. That's what happened at Kermit, Texas. When it was finally all over with, you had an apostatized Christians that had completely been taken over by Lucifer, and that's the same thing as what happened back 2,000 years ago. As the pagans and the Christians became one, for the dragon wielded his power and great authority into the papacy by this concentrated ecclesiastical monarchy. He erased the seventh-day Sabbath from the law of Yahweh, and in his stead he inserted the pagan Sunday. At this point he directed his power against the disloyalty for the demands of the papacy. For this pontifical authority continued to wear out the saints of the Most High, as in the Daniel 7:25, as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Babylon, and Daniel and Medo-Persia prevented the establishment of an ecclesiastical government and brought to naught the king's decree. Just so Luther abolished the pontifical monarchy and brought to an end the papal authority, as the Luther's blow weakened his power and Protestantism continually irritated his wound. The Pope, by the hand of Berthier, was put behind the prison bars. Now, how idol worship crept into the church. Just a few more lines from the pen of the Gibbons describing how idol and saint worship crept into the Christian church, and you could also put parentheses, the Seventh-day Adventist Christian church. The bodies of the St. Luke, St. Andrew, and St. Timothy had reposed near 300 years in the obscure graves from whence they were transported in the solemn pomp to the Church of the Apostles, which the magnificence of Constantine had founded on the banks of the Thracian Bosporus about 50 years afterward. For the same banks were honored by the presence of the Samuel, the judge, and the prophet of the people of Israel. His ashes, deposited in a golden vase and covered with a silken veil, were delivered by the bishops into each other's hands. In the long period of the 1,200 years which elapsed between the reign of the Constantine and the Reformation of the Luther, for the worship of the saints and relics corrupted the pure and perfect simplicity of the Christian model. What was the Christian model? Christian apostatized apostolic believers of the Nazarene Creed, apostatizing, giving up their religion, recanting, and joining an atheist infidel culture, not even a religious organization. For the pagan Rome was not a religious organization at all. They didn't believe in any religion. They didn't believe in any deity at all. And here's what those that were taken captive, that's what they did. They gave up their faith of having eternal life by holding on to their faith and giving it up and preserving their life a few more years in this world, and then they get to face the hell's fire. What a trade-off. And some symptoms of the degeneracy may be observed even in the first generation, which adopted and cherished this pernicious innovation. For the Christians frequented the tombs of the martyrs in the hope of obtaining from their powerful intercession every sort of the spiritual, but more especially of the temporal blessing. They implored the preservation of their health or the curse or the cure of their infirmity, for the fruitfulness of their barren wives or the safety and happiness of their children. Volume 3, page 156, 57, and 62. Both classes were unlawfully urged, the Christians to forget the spirit of the gospel, and the pagans to embody the spirit of the church. And when we say the church, we're talking about the Catholic Church, the pagan church, the infidel atheists, devil worshippers, sublime and simple theology of the primitive Christians was gradually corrupted. Primitive apostolic Nazarene believers was gradually corrupted. The demon power was retarded. Although he could not defeat the operations of the Christian engineers by the persecution. What's the operation? He could not defeat the practice of the sanctuary service with the daily intact and keeping of all the feast days of the law of Moses. They could defeat that operation by the persecution. He succeeded by flattery. What he couldn't do by persecution, he succeeded by flattery. As the unjust persecution against the Christians had ceased, the church took the downward step. Though a few respected the sacredness of the Sabbath, they were not disturbed until after the ecclesiastical monarchy was set up in 538 A.D. The dragon had carefully determined to obtain the perpetuity of the combined national religion, Christian in name but pagan in practice. Satan designed to set up the papacy and to wear out the saints of the Most High. For the persecution, first against the early apostolic congregation, and second against paganism in favor of the Christianity, was reversed under the papal rule. For the new Christians who reverenced the seventh-day Sabbath were, in some respects, hunted like rabbits. Not only did they reverence the seventh-day Sabbath, but all of the holy days, including the observance of the daily, two sacred hours a day at the third and the ninth hour. Those were the ones that hunted like rabbits, and they wouldn't give up their apostolic faith. And there was demanded of them strict obedience to the legal but unchristian religion of the Pope. Notice it said unchristian. In other words, unreligious. They didn't have no religion, but a demonic culture that they had developed of their own. It wasn't even a culture that they inherited. Rome and her divided state cast down the truth and stamped upon it, but it was not accomplished in a sudden arbitrary manner. Sunday observance gradually crept into the Christian church. At first the morning hours were considered somewhat sacred because Yahweh had risen. Yeshua had risen early on that day. After it had become formal, more sacredness was attached unto it, and the hours were extended till noon. Finally, the entire day was set aside as a day of worship. That's how Sunday gradually became a day of worship for the taking of the place of the seventh-day Sabbath, which was fixed in place in the creation week. The 24-hour sacred hours was fixed in place in creation week, but the Sunday worship, it was a gradual thing once they instituted that by Constantine. Okay, to add anything to the religion of Yahshua, though it may seem good on the surface, results in a deadly sting from beneath. Our Elohim has devised a religion sufficient for the saving of the congregation. If carefully followed, he needs no man's help, neither can he accept man-made devices. For I testify unto every man that heareth the words of the prophecy of this book, if any man shall add unto these things, Elohim shall add unto him the things that are written in this book. And if any man shall take away from the words of the book of this prophecy, Yahweh shall take away his part out of the book of life and out of the holy city and from the the things which are written in this book, Revelation 22, 18, and 19. For the Roman congregation displays the simplicity of the truth with the human wisdom and traditions of the man. Or as Daniel puts it, an host, pagan, flood was given him against the deity by reason of the transgression, and it cast down the truth into the ground, and it practiced and prospered. Daniel 8:12. For the host against the deity were the unconverted pagans brought into their congregation. Therefore, by reason of the transgression, how different from the method employed by John the Baptist. But when he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees come to his baptism, he said unto them, O generation of vipers, who hath warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Bring forth therefore fruits meet for repentance. Matthew 3:7-8. It may be profitable to ask, and is the church at the present time imitating John or the Romans? Are her members Christians or pagans? For the Yahweh charged his servant to warn ancient Israel against a similar disastrous practice. He said, And thou shalt say unto the rebellious, even unto the house of Israel, This saith Yahweh Elohim, O ye house of Israel, let it suffice you of all your abominations, and that ye have brought into my sanctuary strangers and uncircumcised in the heart, and uncircumcised in the flesh to be in my sanctuary, to pollute even my house. Ezekiel 44:6-7. Truly, our people work for Elohim or for themselves. For the angel, in giving instruction unto the Daniel, calls the Sabbath and the sanctuary truth the truth. See Daniel 8:12. Indeed, it is the truth. In keeping the Sabbath, we honor Elohim by recognizing Yahshua's holy memorial of the creation. Yahweh, who at sundry times and in divers manners spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the worlds. Hebrews 1:1-2. Because sin entered the human family, the Yahweh instituted the sanctuary truth, which typically illustrates his sacrifice, death, and resurrection, the revelation of our redemption. Thus, in keeping the Sabbath and sanctuary truth, we openly confess that Yahshua is both Creator and Redeemer. Therefore, the Son of Man is Yahshua, also of the Sabbath day. Mark 2:28. The Bible is a revelation of the creation and redemption in the Yahshua, Creator and Redeemer. Therefore, the Sabbath, the sanctuary, constitutes the truth. See Hebrews 9:10, 4:4-10. Thus, these two doctrines are coupled together, cannot be separated, and bear the whole truth. How do we keep the sanctuary truth? It is kept not in the type, but in the antitype. By faith we believe that Yahshua, our high priest in the heavenly sanctuary, is officiating in our behalf, as it was taught in the type by the earthly sanctuary, built by the Moses. As Israel complied with the requirements of its service in the type, so we must in the antitype. Thus we proclaim the truth, Sabbath and sanctuary, more fully. Summary. The horn bears rule over all the earth. In order to fully comprehend what is being taught in this chapter, we again call attention unto the chart on page 128. Now let us follow the chart. along with the readings. In the foregoing study, it is proven that the exceeding great horn of the goat does not represent imperial Rome only, but also papal Rome and the present world as well. For the horn first pursued Yahshua and his followers under the jurisdiction of the Roman monarchy. For the truth expressed by the daily and the sanctuary was trodden down by the reason of transgression. In the period of the broken state of Rome up to 508 A.D., for the imperial government came to an end in the year 476. Furthermore, the papal power treads Yahweh's truth on the ground up to the termination of the prophetic 1260 years and ended with the imprisonment of the Pope in 1798. But the sanctuary and the daily were held to the ground by the great horn. So in other words, when we say daily, we're talking about the whole ordained system of true worship, of the keeping of all the feast days. That is, when we say all the feast days, we're talking about observing the Passover yearly, and the Pentecost yearly, and the Atonement yearly, Feast of Tabernacles yearly, and the Feast of the Unleavened Bread yearly. For there are 70 holy days within any given year, and the daily is something that is performed on every day, not just on the holy days. So when it says the sanctuary and the daily were held to the ground by the great horn up to 1844. Okay, so it shows right there that the daily was taken away in 538 A.D. at the beginning of the 1260 years. And it was freed up in 1798, but no one was brought forth. No one came forth with the truth until 1844 of the restoring of the sanctuary, to put the daily back into operation. And then when 1844 came, and the inspiration disclosed the prophecy of the 2300 days of you by the William Miller and Ellen G. White, and the cleansing of the sanctuary, and the Day of the Atonement in 1844, should have been enough information right there. So the author says the sanctuary and the daily were held to the ground by the great horn, that means the papacy, up to 1844. At that time, he lost control of them. And the power of the three angels' messages raised the truth from the ground or from underfoot and placed it in the church. Therefore, the great horn is a symbol of the entire New Testament period and to the second coming of the Yahshua, corresponding with the legs of iron and the feet and toes of the great image of Daniel 2. These are facts which cannot be denied. However, there is another proof that bears evidence of the same, said the prophet. And after thee, king of Babylon, parenthesis, shall arise another kingdom, inferior unto thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth, Daniel 2:39. The brass kingdom is accepted to represent Grecia, but the fact that is that Grecia never did bear rule over all the earth. The most distant point of the compass reached by Alexander the Great was a portion of India. Neither did Imperial Rome bear rule over all the earth. What then? Is Daniel wrong in the interpretation of the dream? If there is any error, Daniel cannot be at fault. for the responsibility would naturally fall on the Yahweh, who was the overseer of all the writings and the interpretations of the scriptures. If the Daniel had made a mistake, it was Elohim's duty to have him corrected. But as Elohim is perfect in all his work, he cannot allow error in his holy word. Daniel is correct in his interpretation, and the brass kingdom must bear rule over all the earth, for all else may fall, but Yahweh's word shall stand forever. When the ghost's notable horn between his eyes, Alexander, was broken off, four others came up in his stead, the four divisions of Grecia. After this, another little horn came up from one of the four, and it waxed exceedingly great toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land. Daniel 8:9. Note that this horn waxed exceedingly great. That is to say, he was greater than the one between his eyes, Alexander. The exceeding great horn went toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land. Jerusalem, as in Psalms 106:24 and Zechariah 7:14. Geographically, Babylon, where Daniel had the vision, lies east of Jerusalem. Thus, in the vision, the goat stood in Babylon. To make the circle, the horn consequently went toward the four corners of the compass, or, as Daniel puts it, toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land. For the symbol denotes that the exceeding great horn would extend its dominion over all the earth, the four corners of the compass. The fact is, the horn represents Rome in its three divisions, imperial, papal, and the present unstable world. The Bible is correct in making the statement concerning the kingdom of brass, that it shall bear rule over all the earth, for the brass represents the goat. Thus the prophet stated, and he, goat, came from the west on the face of the whole earth, Daniel 8:5. Had Daniel said of the nondescript beast symbol of imperial and papal Rome that it would bear rule over all the earth, the claim would prove incorrect. For the nondescript beast in his first stage represents imperial Rome, and in his second stage, papal Rome, up to 1798, at which time the beast came to its end with the imprisonment of the Pope Pius VI, and gave place to the leopard-like beast of Revelation 13:1-3. Note the accuracy of the inspiration. As the prophet said, the kingdom of the iron shall bear rule over all the earth, it would have been true as far as the iron bearing rule. But such affirmation would have discredited this wonderful lesson taught by the symbolic goat. What is true of the iron and clay is true of the goat, and one corresponds with the other. The horn extends beyond 1798 and to the second coming of Yeshua. Corresponding with the iron legs, feet, and toes of the great image in Daniel 2, of the horn we read, it shall be broken without hand, Daniel 8:25. The same terms of speech are used of the feet and toes of the great image in Daniel 2:45. In the days of these kings, Daniel says, shall the Elohim of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, Daniel 2:44. Therefore, the present civilization is the product of the goat, or the kingdom of brass. As inspiration said, the kingdom of iron shall bear rule over all the earth, it would have marred the picture. For the gold, silver, and brass, Old Testament time, stands on the legs of the iron, New Testament time. Thus, the symbol proves that the Old Testament period stands on the Christian dispensation, Yahshua, and the New Testament period feeds on the Old Testament dispensation. The trunk of the great image depicting a living being containing all the living organs corresponds to the Bible, for the Old Testament is the great storehouse of the Word of Yahweh, and the New feeds from the Old and the Old Dispensation. Yahweh gathered the Word of Yahweh into the Bible to feed the world in the New Dispensation. The New Testament is the fulfillment of the Old. Yahweh's Word spells perfection in every way. The Sabbath trodden only once, we again call your attention to the woman, Church of the Revelation 12, where we are told she was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, that they should feed her there 1,260 days, Revelation 12:14-6. As the wings of the lion, Babylon, and the four-headed leopard, Grecian, four divisions, Daniel 7:4-6, represents periods of world history, see pages 33-42, so the wings of the woman also must denote two great periods of church history. The eagle, being the king of birds, his wings must stand for chief, head, or first. Therefore, each wing must be a symbol of one of these two great periods from their very beginning. If not, inspiration emphasized the fact that the wings were of a great eagle, we could possibly conclude that one of them may stand for the Old Testament period and the other for the New Testament era, or the apostolic era in the New Testament. But the word great does not allow such conclusion. Thus, one of the wings must apprehend the congregation's history from the creation unto the crucifixion of the Yeshua, and the other from the resurrection unto the end of this present world. Here, too, it would be possible for us to conclude that one wing may stand for the period before the Bible came, and the other for the biblical period after the Exodus. But the words of the Revelator overrule that thought. For he says, "And unto the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness into her place, where she is nourished for a time and times, and a half a time, from the face of the serpent." Revelation 12:14. Therefore she was given the wings to fly into the wilderness in the New Testament time. Okay, so she's given those wings. Not at the very beginning, apparently. It says she was given to them in the New Testament time. For the symbol reveals that Elohim had only one congregation, truth, in all ages, and that the cross of Yeshua is the only center of attraction. The lesson teaches that the congregation of Yahweh fled into the wilderness only once in her entire history, and that was from 538 to 1798 A.D. During this time, the Sabbath and the sanctuary truths were cast down to the ground or underfoot. Therefore, the continuity of these truths had never before the year 538 been interrupted by the church leadership, although these divine truths may not always have been respected by members or leaders in the church. They were there for those who wanted them. Thus, Elohim's eternal truth could have been kept by his people openly in all ages, save the period under the papal rule. Again, note that the truth was cast down and the woman congregation had fled into the wilderness. Inspiration says, "She hath the place prepared of Yahweh, that they should feed her there." Revelation 12:6-14. So while the truth was cast down by the church leadership in that period, and the abomination set up, Yahweh has some in obscurity who kept his Sabbath and had knowledge of the sanctuary truth through the entire 1260 years of the wilderness journey. Now this could be written more to the point of the people during the 1260 years that were hiding from the papacy. They had a knowledge of the sanctuary truth through the entire, they practiced. If they had the knowledge of the Sabbath, then they were descendants from the Apostolic Nazarene Creed, then they were practicing the sanctuary truth. They had a knowledge of how they preserved that truth, and they had knowledge of how to follow the heavenly calendar. And so they not only Yahweh had some in obscurity who kept his Sabbath and had knowledge of the sanctuary truth, no, who also kept all of the holy days through the entire 1260 years of the wilderness journey. Thus she was nourished, fed, revealing that she was to return. Okay, so when she returns, she's going to return with that same form of worship that she had during that 1260 years. Devil worship in all ages. By observing the chart, the history of the Sabbath and Sunday observance, our true and false worship will be noticed. In the beginning, the Yeshua created Adam and Eve and placed the holy couple in the Garden of Elohim. But our first parents transgressed the counsel of the Most High, and sin entered the Eden home. In order to preserve his original plan for the human family, he was compelled to remove our parents from their Edenic abode. Under them were born sons and daughters, see Genesis 5:4. Their first two sons are brought to our attention by the scriptures in a contrast that is most striking and one that should be carefully considered by every professor of the religion. For the sacrifice and religious worship of the two firstborn in the human family revealed that the Savior of the world had made known the divine plan of salvation unto the family of Adam. For their system of the worship being devised by the Creator himself was perfect and able to save the sinner from his sin. Abel's careful religious observance according unto the instruction of the deity whom he worshipped shows that only such worship, honor, and praise can be acceptable unto Yahweh. Cain was not mindful of the commandment, but this by presenting that which had not required went about to establish a religion of his own. As he immediately afterwards slew his brother, it should be an object lesson to all that are worship according to the inclination of men, however good and innocent it may seem, cannot sanctify and save the worshiper, but instead it takes him deeper into sin and final ruin. Those who are inclined to persecute the ones who do not worship as they do are bowing down with Cain at the altar made of bricks. Such altars are the product of man by the converting the form of the original, and though more attractive than the altar stone may seem, there is no sanctifying power in them, and their worship is as deadly as poison. For the evidence cannot be denied that both forms of worship, true and false, were introduced at about the same time and ran side by side. Both seem innocent and were conducted about the same time, with the distinction that the one is in the harmony with Elohim's book and law, and the other is not. The two tracks on the chart by the side of Abel represents Elohim's eternal truth, Sabbath and sanctuary, for the Sabbath originated in the Garden of Yahweh, and the seventh day And on the seventh day, Yahweh ended his work of which he had made. And he created on the seventh day from all, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And Yahweh blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which Yahweh created and made. Genesis 2:2-3. Now, what's the hidden clause here? And that's the week of creation. The fourth day, when he created the moon, the sun, and the stars. And the moon, the sun, and the stars today prove to teach us about true time for the observing of the sanctuary truth of all the holy days in the course of 1 year. So that's what he rested from. He set up the plan of salvation with the starry host and the heavens, and with the moon and the sun and the stars. So that if man can't, the only way man can figure out the creation calendar and create a creation calendar is to have a knowledge of the sun, the moon, and the stars and how they work. Okay. Because of sin, the sanctuary truth is added after the fall of Adam. Both truths are of vital importance. The Sabbath we keep to avoid sinning, but the sanctuary truth is the safest after we have sinned. The one is to keep us from falling, and the other is the remedy if we fall. If after receiving the knowledge of truth we break the Sabbath, we have sinned and denied the Creator, which is far worse than the sin of Adam. By non-compliance with the sanctuary truth, we refuse the plan or remedy and reject the Savior of our salvation. Read The Desire of Ages, page 165. The Sabbath is a part of the Ten Commandment law. It's only a part of it. Exodus 20, verse 1-17. The sanctuary truth is the law of our salvation after we have sinned. Adam sinned by eating the forbidden fruit. Lucifer sinned by setting himself up as a god. Said he, I will ascend into the heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of Yahweh. I will sit also upon the mount of congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Isaiah 14:13-14. That was an impossibility. Well, this brings to close our test. This is our contest. That's at the 11th hour calling us number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with this. Will there be any stars in my crown? I am thinking today of that beautiful land I shall reach when the sun goeth down. When through wonderful grace by my Savior I stand, will there be any stars in my crown? Will there be any stars in my crown? When evening the sun goeth down, and I wake with the blessed in a mansion of rest, will there be any stars in my crown? In the strength of the Yah, let me labor and pray, let me watch as a winner of souls, that bright stars may be mine in the glorious day, when His praise like the sea will overflow. Will there be any stars in my crown, when at evening the sun goeth down, when I wake with the blessed in the mansions of love? Will there be any stars in my crown? Oh, what joy it will be was sweet in my bliss in the city of gold. Should there be any stars in my crown? Will there be any stars in my crown? When at evening the sun goeth down, when I wake with the bliss in the mansions of rest, will there be any stars?